for the Daily Brief podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. Today, I'm speaking with Art Spiegel. He is CEO and founder of 789 Entertainment, an award-winning director and producer. Welcome to the show, Art.
Great to be here.
I'm very excited to talk to you because I met you back in when I first started at Promax BDA, and I met you at the conference, and then you got this great painting, and I met you. I was like, oh my gosh, he's really awesome, and I saw what you're doing. So I'm glad to see you again after all of these years.
Yes, well, I'm glad that worked out.
Yes. Tell us, how did you begin in the career as a creative?
Well, I think about my first job is I think I always wanted to be in the creative arts and the television business. And I actually, throughout college, I actually interned while I was in college. I think my first internship was at Nickelodeon in New York, like in the early 90s. And then from there, I think I had an internship at CNN in Atlanta. And I started freelancing as a PA at Cartoon Network when it first launched. So wow. I was definitely... knew what I wanted to do very early on and, you know, kind of dove into it.
Yeah. And that's kind of rare, don't you think?
I guess so. I think I had a lot of pressure from my parents to be pre-med and be a doctor. So I had to kind of prove to them, no, this is a real career and you can really make money and stuff. So I think there was a little bit of that going on at the same time.
So do you remember your first project and can you describe your job in the entertainment marketing industry versus...
I mean, like my very first project, like as an intern, I remember it was for Nickelodeon. It was an I Dream of Jeannie promo shoot. And I think I ran the smoke machine on this promo shoot that we were doing where there was this woman dancing like a genie and we were projecting words on her. I think that was my very first production experience. Yes. And then from there and from all my kind of internships and PA work, I actually, my first real job was a PA writer at TNT in Atlanta. That was incredible. Actually, the creative director at that time is a woman named Andrea Taylor, who was really an amazing mentor to me. And she was in the business for a very long time, started in advertising and did a lot of work, major redesigns. I think she worked at Comedy Central and TNT and a lot of other places. And she was really incredible kind of leader and teacher in terms of creative thinking and how do you think about a promo and, you know, what, you know, how do you write for an audience and how, you know, do you think that are innovative and unexpected. So that's really, I kind of, those early days at TNT, I think were very formative.
So did she form your way of short form content of how to write quick and...
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people when they early started off, I think I did these things called, I think they're called VOCs or like credit, you know, credit voiceovers where literally you had to be witty in two sentences for, you know, probably like 7 seconds. So there was endless amounts of writing at those days when they did those things. And I think that's really when I learned my chops. And she was always very kind of, nope, that's not right. Try it this way. Try it that way. She never really showed us. She really made us kind of earn.
Oh, that's cool.
Earn the copy. Yeah.
I think that's more, I think as a human being,
sure,
you take that in more and you're like, oh, okay, I remember this feeling of creating this line or doing this versus someone telling you, hey, you do
sure
that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I still remember, like, you know, that first moment where my voiceover credit was on some, the credits, I think, like, in the night, in the heat of the night or something horrible. At that point, where it was like, oh my God, I have something on TV. Like, I wrote that word and it's actually on TV somehow was a pretty amazing feeling.
Right, I bet.
Yeah.
So can you talk about being a entertainment marketer then versus now?
Yeah, well, I think then it was much more kind of, I would imagine it was much more kind of, you really were a very valued creator and creative at that time. It was much more kind of almost practically advertising agency time where there was, you know, you were still shooting on film, actually, and it was really kind of the fundamentals of people took promo and marketing very seriously. It was kind of more of an elevated art, I would say, at that time. Mm-hmm. So which was really incredible. It was kind of the beauty of the olden days of advertising, where, you know, there was a lot of energy and time and effort put into a campaign, into an idea. But the beauty of promo was you got to do all the pieces of it at that time. You know, you had to come up with the idea and do the writing, and you could be at the shoot and direct and do the post-production. So it was still, you had the resources and people wanted big ideas.
What resources?
Yes, yeah, somehow. but they let you really get your hands dirty and do everything. Mm-hmm. I think now we're in a very different time. You know, obviously, I think the world has changed. The tools in which you make TV or make marketing have obviously changed. And, you know, I think the big challenge is there's not really a barrier to entry. I think there's a lot of creative people, a lot of young creative people who now have the tools that were not available to a lot of us who started many years ago. You really needed an Avid and a film camera and everything. But now, obviously, technology has kind of equaled the playing field, which is great. I think that just creates more innovation and kind mm-hmm. of keeps people's chops up. I think the challenge all of us are facing in this industry now is the disposable nature of content, right? The fact that you can binge watch, you know, an entire season, the fact that you can watch anything, anytime, anywhere. So the value of promo and tune in has kind of been lessened. But when you think about in the old days, we'd buy VHSs or you'd, you know, go to Blockbuster and it was a big deal and there was a greater value, I think, to content. I think now it's become so accessible and disposable. It's a challenge because that makes marketing and promo even more disposable than the content itself.
Right.
So now it's, you know, I think that's a real challenge. I think every network and I think marketing agency is trying to resolve and solve for.
I mean, I know as a mother,
right.
I'm always looking for things for my son, and the easiest way I can get it. So, you know, so I have the Amazon Prime and I have the Netflix.
The Netflix. I've heard of that.
And then I have, you know, it connecting through iTunes.
Yeah, Apple TV.
Apple TV.
Sure.
Thank you. Still learning, you know.
I'm sure there's something new today.
Right. Yeah. But without the promos, I would not know what to find for my son, you know?
Right.
So it's like, oh my gosh, I just saw a great promo. You know, in that aspect, promos are really important now.
I mean, I definitely think that the challenge, I think that networks and IP owners and studios have now is, yes, there's so many choices, there's so much content out there that how do you get people to know you exist, right? Mm-hmm. How do you get any attention when there's so much noise and there's so many choices? So I would say that there is an increased value in promo. There is an increased value is like that attention and those eyeballs are more valuable than ever. So it's just a matter of how do you reach those viewers when, you know, they want to tune out promos and commercials and all those things. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to use the mediums available and think about innovative ways to kind of connect with audience these days. But yes. I definitely think it's more valuable than ever, but certainly more challenging than ever to get those eyeballs.
Yes.
You know, I think one of the funny things I often say is like, a new show or a show that's launching is not competing with another network or another show. It's competing with texting.
Oh, right.
Right? It's like,
and the tablet.
Right. And just the idea of, oh, my friend wants to text me. I'm going to pay attention to this versus tune in to the show.
Right.
It's a whole new world.
Now, Art, how did you go about determining to create 789 and focus on kids' entertainment?
Yeah, I think I always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur and do my own thing. I actually started 789 when I was 22, when I was working at...
High achiever.
Yeah, well, I was probably making like $75 a week at that point or something. But no, I always knew I wanted to do my own thing and be creative. And so I certainly kind of tried and got one client and didn't mess up and got another client and they liked me and kind of just started building from there. But I think the focus on kids was just a matter of I've always been passionate about kids. It's really fun. There's like no creative boundaries. You can kind of think of anything or do anything, and there's no rhyme or reason. So there's this creative freedom that comes with it that is really exciting to me and the team here. Mm-hmm. And then also, I think at the end of the day, it's just a matter of having an expertise. You know, I think we all have the same tools. We all are, there's a lot of creative people in this industry with great ideas and understand technology and have a vision. But I think from our standpoint, we're like, of course we can do a lot of different kind of work for a lot of different kind of clients, but the more that we can really dig into an audience and understand what they're thinking and what they like and breathe it and live it every day, I think the more value we'd have for our clients. So it's like a conscious decision to really focus on that demo and that audience.
Yeah, and you have recently produced 22 episodes of Massive Monster Mayhem.
Yes, that's how you say it. So I'm glad you mentioned that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Can you describe the show and discuss how you came up with and developed the project?
Yeah, so so if I describe the show, it's a little tough to describe, but I would call it, it's kind of this fantasy reality competition animated comedy. It's very strange, and it's really kind of what we did. We took everything we knew about boys 6 to 11 and jammed it into one show.
Yes.
And really, I would say also probably everything we knew about production and creativity and jammed it all into one show. And it's a kind of hybrid game show where there's a scripted storyline. So we have characters and worlds and kind of stories of the episode. But at the same time, we have real kids competing in competition to win prizes. So it's a lot of things jam into one. But it's been really amazing, and you know, we're really happy with it, and Nick is super happy with it, and it's kind of a dream come true. It was something that we developed for a very long time, for about 5 years. Something that's like, you know, where really it was something we developed in house, did all the design, all the creative work. You know, we produced our own pilot. Really something that we loved and we're passionate about, and you know, didn't take no for an answer for a long time. There were a lot of no's along the way, but it was something we believed in, and we had the energy to keep it going. And no, it's really exciting. And yeah, so we did 22 half hours for Nick, and we actually just sold it around the world, 140 territories.
Oh my gosh, congrats.
Yeah. And the toys come out in October.
Wow.
So we're super excited because, you know, as everyone knows, that's kind of a lottery ticket. The long form TV show thing is a lottery ticket. You have a great idea, but it's right place, right time, what the person ate
yes.
for breakfast, what kids are into. So no, we're really grateful, and yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Now I look at this and I say, you know, you incorporated all these things. You incorporated monsters and wrestling and game shows and outer space. And as a mother, I have a 5-year-old. I'm like, yes, that's everything that he loves.
Right.
That's like, yes, he's going to be watching it. But as a creator or someone that has to put it all together, I'm like, holy crap, how am I going to do that? Like, so how did you go about selecting the key elements to put in there?
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of it, I think what the beauty of this exercise was, it was something we did for ourselves. We didn't have a client, right? And I think obviously there was this kind of, what do we do if we have no rules? We don't have to answer to anyone. It's just like, whatever we want to do, let's do it. And having that creative freedom, I think, really made it somewhat easy for it to come to life, because it was like, there's no wrong answer. Oh, there's a giant robot that's driven by a hot dog in his head. That's a great idea. Let's do that one. Or a giant piece of evil cheese that wants to be a stand-up comedian. Yes, that makes sense. Let's do that. So I think there's the general freedom of no rules, I think, made it pretty easy to come together in that way.
You know, so creating Promax BDA, the conference, and trying to get content together, and a lot of creatives asking how do you get to that point where you can create these spectacular things. I think that's the key. If you don't have those limitations, just think of what you can create.
Yeah. And I think especially in terms of people in the promo and short form business, we have a really interesting advantage, I think, over a lot of people in the production world that we're maybe not aware of. And I think going through this experience really demystifies that for me, in the sense of, I kind of feel like short form is like the secret of Hollywood, in the sense of when you're making a movie or a TV show, you typically have a specific role. I'm the writer, I'm the editor, I'm the cameraman, and you know, it takes a big team of people to make these things. But what I found, the beauty of promo is that you kind of have to do everything, and you kind of learn the chops of everything. So you got to write the promo, you got to shoot it. Sometimes you got to build the prop. Some, you know, you're in the edit sessions, you're in the audio suite, and the beauty of that is not only do you get that whole creative satisfaction of taking something from start to finish, which I think is very rare in this town, I think you also get the knowledge of doing all those pieces and all those elements. And I think what I found in long form, a lot of people have their expertise, but maybe aren't familiar with all the other pieces, while people in short form have been forced to or engaged in every aspect of these things. Mm-hmm. Where I think when short form people want to change their vision or focus on long form, I think they have a lot more superpowers, a lot more advantages than they realize.
Do you find, this coming down to what you said, do you find that a lot of people in promo have a type A personality where they have to do all of that stuff because they need to have the control, or that's just their personality?
I don't know. I think it's maybe the nature and the expectation of promo, in the sense of kind of, look, we have this budget, we have this timeline, we have these resources, figure it out.
Right, let's do it.
Right, I think it's much more like, let's be resourceful and do it. And I think that happens so often, I think that's probably what happens. There's certainly plenty of type A people that want to control the whole thing too.
Not that there's anything wrong with it.
Right, exactly. But yeah, look, I just feel like there's a real interesting niche that we have in this industry, you know, whether it be long form or even kind of this new digital world that has kind of popped up. If you know how to do all the pieces and you know quality, I think you do have an advantage over kind of the general population. Look, I mean, obviously we all know long form, like I said, is a lottery ticket. It takes a really long time, a lot of fortunate things coming together. So a lot of energy and work can go unrewarded in that world, obviously. But the opportunity is, life becomes a little easier. You have more opportunities coming to you, kind of things come to fruition. Other people help kind of bring your vision to life. So that's obviously the amazing aspect of that. I think the short form world obviously is, there's more to do. There's more things that need to get done. I think that's the other interesting aspect, that people's appetite for content these days is insatiable, right? Especially kids, but every kind of demo, it's just you need more content every day and what's new and what's fresh. So I think that's certainly the opportunity in the short form world. It's just a matter of finding, I guess, the budgets and the resources to be able to do that stuff at a good quality.
So how does technology and computer-generated graphics and animation allow you to create massive monster mayhem?
Yeah, well, one of the cool aspects of the show is we really, it's amazing to say, we really did something that had never been done before. And what we did was we took this pre-vision kind of real-time rendering and compositing technology, and we use it for kind of an unintended purpose. And the way we shot the show is it's physical sets and games in green screen environments. But what we did was in real time, we would composite in the environments and effects and kind of immerse the kid in the show as it was happening. So one, it gives the show a very unique visual look. Two, it also worked for our budget, because typically a game show, you have to shoot 5 a day and kind of keep the pace going. So it allows you something really big, kind of CG effects, but in real time. So that was, I think, a really unique kind of exercise that, you know, was a bit of a risk, but definitely worked out.
Now, you guys did so much on the show. Like, when you saw the product, did you totally geek out?
Yeah, I definitely geek out on this show, and it's just so funny how much of my brain is in it, and I see a lot of myself, my immature kind of childish version of myself throughout the show. But yeah, no, it's really amazing, and you know, just because we did kind of write it and develop it and, you know, piece it all together and kind of birth it. So no, it's pretty amazing to see it all come together.
Now, what type of advice would you provide to creatives who want to go into kids' entertainment?
That's a good question. To kids' entertainment specifically, look, I think any idea you do, if you're trying to do a long form thing, I think you just got to be true to yourself in the sense of do what feels good to you. Like, that's the stuff that people can sense in the room. Like, you make a sizzle, you have an idea. If it's something that you really love and you really care about and it is purely your creative idea, that like shines through. Somehow the guy in the room senses that. And I think you have a much better opportunity of it being a success versus something like, oh, I think we need a social experiment about dancing chickens or whatever it happens to be. Yeah. So being true to yourself, I think, always helps.
Yeah. And I think that trust your gut goes with that well. In order for you to actually be a true creative, you have to have that intuition as well to say, oh, this is right. This feels right.
Right. Yeah. And then look, and then obviously I think again, people in the promo short form world have the skill sets to make their own thing relatively easy. You know, they know how to do that. Yeah. So I think that's always the other thing that you have to do. I think you have to make a piece of content to really show somebody your vision. You know, it's hard on a piece of paper. It's hard when it's vague. But if you can take the time to make a short clip of what you're really talking about, I think that keeps, you know, the project alive.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. What steps do you take to reinvent or reinterpret existing franchise IP for a new audience?
Yeah, that's something we're really proud of and love that we get to do that. You get to work with these really awesome franchises and brands that we've always loved as a kids and they're like globally loved. You know, it's really a matter of taking the core element of, say, like Mickey Mouse or Disney Princess, something that people really have an emotional connection to, and making sure you retain that because that's everything. And then how do you contemporize it? How do you change the voice a little bit? How do you, you know, kind of reframe it in a format that kids or people are more familiar with these days? I think, you know, what's a way to kind of pay homage to that content, but not kind of mock it, you know? An example, we were lucky enough to work with Disney franchises on Mickey Mouse, and we did a short series called The Mickey Meowse Club. And it was a show hosted by two cats who loved Mickey Mouse and really kind of almost had like a vlog in their bedroom.
That's
and they talked
hilarious.
About how incredible he was, and not because they wanted to eat him, just because they were really big fans. And that was a case where we shot live action cats and did mouth replacement as if they were talking about Mickey Mouse. So
that's hilarious.
So, you know, and so that was an example where, okay, people love cats online, kids like vlogs, kids like talking cats, to trying to put those things together in a way that's, you know, clever and still kind of respectful of the brand.
That is fun. Yeah. I like that. Speaking of fun, your place here, I'm in the 789 Entertainment Studios, and it's so fun and exciting. I can just sit here all day. Oh, look at all the Promax BDA awards. Look at that.
See? Yeah, we really try. We participate.
Yeah, you do. These are great, but I'm going to take like a shelf of stuff home for my son.
Great.
But I thank you so much for sharing your time. I know you're a busy man.
No,
so.
Thank you so much. It's such a privilege to get to do this. And I've been about part of Promax BDA, I want to say probably 20 years at this point.
Wow.
So, no, it's an amazing organization and happy to be a part of it.
All right. Well, we'll see you at the conference this year in June.
Thank you.
Paige Alpiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video helper provides the music. Digital producer Kate LaCaire-Marion and social media coordinator Kristen Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A. Follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack and follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. And you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Podomatic, and now on Spotify. Thanks for listening.